All right. This is an attorney by the name of Robert Bilott. He's a defense attorney who worked for an environmental team for a Cincinnati law firm. He spent most of his days defending companies like DuPont until 1998, when a farmer from his dad's hometown told him about a huge number of his cattle that were dying in just horrific ways, foaming at the mouth, covered with all kinds of lesions. And when Bilott, the attorney, looked into this matter, he uncovered clear evidence that a chemical factory run by DuPont, was knowingly dumping toxic waste into that town's water supply. The plant was 35 times bigger than the Pentagon. Bilott took the case, and he proved a decades-old scheme by DuPont of pollution. It not only resulted in the death of thousands of cattle, but cancers in humans, immune issues in humans, birth defects. The story was told by the New York Times, and it was made into a movie starring Mark Ruffalo called Dark Waters. So water can be poisoned. Be careful. Our minds can be poisoned. Be careful. Luke tells the story of Paul and Barnabas in an area in what today is Turkey. He says this, at Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed, but the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the other Gentiles, and here's the key for today, and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So in this story, people were the polluters. They poisoned people's minds. My question for all of us is, what poison has been put into our minds from other people? Oh, just for example, dwelling on the past, comparing yourself to others, worrying about something before it happens, thinking you can change others, thinking you're always right, depending on others for your happiness, thinking there's only one right or one wrong, the fear of never being good enough. This last one, the fear of never measuring up or being good enough, is the fear that Ted Lasso had. Ted Lasso has become my new Andy Griffith. I went through many years at another church of, I think we probably showed every Andy Griffith episode in sermons at that church. And the homespun wisdom of Ted Lasso speaks to me as well. And in this scene, he has been challenged to a game of darts by the ex-husband of the owner of the soccer team that Ted Lasso coaches, manages, whatever they call that in England. But it's a great lesson in this scene of a dart game. Take a look.
So, Rupert, y'all take your darts over here pretty seriously, huh? This and what's the billiard game y'all do that sounds like a brand of cookies?
Snooker?
That's it. That's the one. Yeah, boy, I'd love to curl up on a couch under a weighted blanket, watch You've Got Mail, and devour a box of Snookers. Let's see what we got here. Hey, there it is.
Do you like darts, Ted? Oh,
they're okay. I'm more of a cornhole man myself. Yeah. Nope.
Huh. How about a game? I mean, we could maybe wager, say, 10,000 pounds?
Well, as my doctor told me when I got addicted to fettuccine Alfredo, that's a little rich for my blood. How about this? If you win, I'll let you pick the starting lineup of the last two games of the season. But if I win, you can't go anywhere near the owner's box, at least not while Rebecca's still in charge.
Ted, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I believe some folks call it white knight, but I don't know. I'm just following my gut here. It's okay.
What do you think?
You're on.
Okay. Double in, double out.
Whatever you say, Rupert Deuce. Yeah. Just let me know if I'm winning or losing, all right?
Oh, I forgot I had these on me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait a second. I forgot I'm left-handed. Oh, it's gonna be a hoot. You know, Rupert, guys have underestimated me my entire life. And for years, I never understood why. It used to really bother me. But then one day, I was driving my little boy to school, and I saw this quote by Walt Whitman. It was painted on the wall there. It said, "Be curious, not judgmental." And I like that. So I get back in my car, and I'm driving to work. And all of a sudden, it hits me. All them fellas that used to belittle me, not a single one of them were curious. You know, they thought they had everything all figured out, and so they judged everything, and they judged everyone. And I realized that they're underestimating me. Who I was had nothing to do with it. Because if they were curious, they would ask questions. You know? Questions like, "Have you played a lot of darts, Ted?" Which I would have answered, "Yes, sir." Every Sunday afternoon at a sports bar with my father from age 10 till I was 16 when he passed away. Barbecue sauce.
I mean, I just watched that and cried. Of course, it doesn't take much for me to cry, you know that, but how many times have you been belittled? Told that you don't measure up because somebody didn't take time to get to know you? How many times have I judged people? Because I didn't take time to get to know them. Be curious. Not judgmental. Now, as you watch that clip, you forgot about all those important lessons. The only thing on your mind is, what in the world does barbecue sauce mean? Right before he threw that winning dart, he said barbecue sauce. Well, Jason explained it. Whether you're winning or losing, keep a positive mindset. Remember that darts got to come from the heart. If you're about to take a winning shot, think of something that makes you smile. Mine is good old barbecue sauce. There you go. Whatever makes you smile. Well, how can we clean our minds from all those painful messages and that poison that somebody has put into our minds about ourselves? You can train your brain. The Bible calls it one thing, transformation, renewal. Science calls it neuroplasticity. The human brain has about 86 billion neurons. I don't think I have that many. And the researchers used to think that those neurons quit being created shortly after birth. They just kind of stopped. But new research, and I love research, new research shows that our brain can continue to construct roadways, and it can create new connections and even create brand new neurons. And science calls that neuroplasticity, and spirituality calls it transformation, renewal, enlightenment. In the Buddhist world, it's called Bianhua. Paul writes this, "Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." And when I was a kid growing up in Southern Baptist world, this verse was used, as most every verse was used when I was in youth group, to deter us from sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's amazing how every youth director could turn every verse into keeping us from doing those things. the trinity of evil. And that's why I love sex, drugs, and rock and roll today. See, that's why we send the students out. Yeah. And it's not that at all. Let's break this down just a little bit today. That word translated conform is the Greek word schema. It literally means your outward form. And the truth of the matter is, my schema at 65 is not at all like my schema was at 25. It is changing. Every time I look into the mirror, I'm absolutely in a state of shock. Now, some people age really well. Meryl Streep and Raiders, what's his name, Harrison. I forget these people. See, I'm so old. Clint and Bill Murray, thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't age well. I'm not aging like wine. I'm aging like milk, getting sour and chunky. Yeah. Our schema is always changing. Fashions are always changing. What was popular in the 70s when I was in high school is surprisingly popular again today, I've noticed. So they change and then they come back. Somebody said that fashion comes and goes, bad taste is timeless. So we have used this verse, or I have used this verse, and I hope you have too. It'll make me feel better if I'm not the only one, to judge people that we think are worldly, to judge people who believe differently than I, who have different values than I, who are acting in a worldly way, because that's what we're supposed to do, isn't it? Aren't we supposed to judge people? Aren't we supposed to point out their sins and the error of their ways just to help them? Maybe not. Conformity is a real issue with Paul, where we don't challenge our paradigms, where we don't question what we've been taught, where we don't question the philosophies that are out there. And it's, maybe that's the poison in the water. Be careful what you read. Be careful what you listen to. I heard on the news this morning as Denise and I were getting dressed that one-third of Americans get their news from Facebook. Poison in the water. Yeah, except random thoughts from the Rev, which you will find on Facebook. Yeah, transformation does not come by conforming behavior. It comes from asking the question, why? Why did I believe what I believed? And then inviting transformation. So, just to make clear, the ways of the world are not sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's true that there are some behaviors that are unhealthy and destructive, and we don't need to do them. But behind, I mean, it's such a superficial thing. What Paul is talking about is our conformity to the way we see the world, the way we see God, the way we see ourselves, the way we see other people. Ways of the world are not these superficial actions. He's not telling us to not conform our actions, but to conform the way, not to conform the way we think. The ways of the, you know, let me go back to this verse just for a minute. I think it's so interesting. That word translated world, I don't know why the translators do this, but the Greek word is not world at all. The Greek word is einos, which is the word for a particular period of time, an age. It's not the world at all. And so Paul is saying every age has certain values. Every age has certain styles, I guess. Don't conform yourself to that age in which you live. Don't let how everybody else is valuing things shape you. I'm not sure why they use the word world. That's free right there. Let's go back. I think what Paul is really saying is some of the ways of the age that I see are hate and isolation, greed, a sense of separateness. It's my job as a spiritual leader not to tell you that you're separated from God, but tell you that you feel separated from God, but you're not. God is in you and you are connected, and to awaken yourself and be aware of that connection. I think the spirit of our age is certainty. I'm right. And that goes along with pride and violence and fear and anger. So I have to ask myself the question, and maybe you do too, is there conformity in your life that you need to question to any of these things? Is there a transformation that needs to be made? So ask the question, be open to the divine, let God bring about within you the best that you can be. Let's go on and look at this verse a little bit more. He uses this word transform, and it's that great word that we talk about when we were kids with a butterfly coming from a caterpillar, metamorphosis. You see, within that caterpillar is the nature of a butterfly, and the process of metamorphosis is a process of the inner identity being expressed outwardly. That's metamorpho. Now, meta means to change after you're being with someone or something. Some experience or some person changes you. You're changed after. And the morpho-o means to change your form on the outside that keeps with what's true on the inside. Caterpillar to butterfly. Change after being with. Have you been changed in a particular way after an experience, after being with an experience or being with a person? We were all changed, I think, and maybe still are being changed because of COVID, the lockdown of COVID. One thing that changed me in the lockdown of COVID is I began to see the value of a slower pace of life, and I just really haven't sped back up all the way yet. Maybe I'm not going to. I think I'll just stay slow. Well, I haven't done very well with that, have I? Had two weddings yesterday. I'm exhausted today. The ceremony was short, but the parties afterwards were really long. So, you know, when I was at Fellowship Bible, and I don't know why, but people who were into and involved with and just loved by AA began to come to Fellowship. And I had such preconceived ideas toward alcoholism and that kind of thing. You know, we were taught that it was a sin. And so I was very judgmental toward alcoholics and people who struggled with that. And I changed around 2000, when I began to listen to stories from people who had started coming to Fellowship, who were involved in AA, changed my life. And that led me to 2008, when I began to listen to the stories of people who were LGBTQ. Because I really judged them. And listening to their stories for 6 months to a year, it changed me. After being with them, I was transformed in a good way. Being diagnosed with COPD changed me. I began to appreciate things I used to take for granted, like breathing. And you'll notice that I really have a hard time talking even today. The way to live a transformed life is by being with someone or having an experience. We are changed after being with. And what that means for me spiritually in my world is what Paul writes about it to the Corinthians. Now, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory. And when we contemplate, and that word contemplate means to see. When we see the Lord's glory, we are being transformed, metamorpho, into His image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So this word to contemplate, to see, means to see it and show it, gaze at it and reflect it. So transformation comes from seeing. We're not transformed, we're not changed by learning, but by looking. Now, I love to learn, and learning's good. But that's not the key to transformation. We're not transformed by doing something. Now, doing is great. Serving, we just talked about, that's true spirituality. But the transformation, the action, follows the transformation. We see, and we show it. Moses, what a great story that the Hebrew people give us about Moses. On the Mount Sinai, he saw God, and it changed him. His face glowed with the glory of God. He wasn't even aware of it. But when he got down to the base of the mountain, people saw it. He saw God, and it changed him. That's the method. That's the process. Transformation comes from contemplation. The word translated contemplate was used in Paul's day to describe a mirror. When you look at a mirror, you see yourself. And what a shock that is. So what I want to just propose, and it may not be right, but I'm trying to understand it. When I look in the mirror and I see myself, I wonder if Paul is saying, when you look in the mirror, what you will see is God. Not that I'm God at all, but when you look in the mirror, you see God in you. And when you see the presence of God in you, then you begin to reflect that presence in your practice, in your persona. And the glowing of our face, I think, is described by Paul in Galatians, where he says, the fruit of the Spirit is this: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Maybe those things come only after we see God. So what does it mean to contemplate and to see God? I was taught that prayer basically is asking things from God or telling God things. And Jesus kind of says that's not really necessary. In Matthew chapter 6, he says, God already knows it. You don't need to tell him what's going on. We probably need to hear us say it. But maybe this is what contemplation is not so much asking things from God, although that's a legitimate part of prayer. But maybe if I focus too much on that, I forget the bigger picture, that prayer is basically being silent before God and to remove the thoughts from my mind and to allow God in my silence. To allow love in my silence to be shown to me, to speak to me. And I see that love in my silence. And I also see some crap in my life in that silence. But I see that crap being unconditionally loved, because it's me that God loves, even with my stuff. And out of that love, maybe I can do these joy, peace, patience stuff. So we reflect what we see. My dad used to always say, you become like that to which you pay attention. He was always telling me that, so I wouldn't hang around people that he didn't want me to hang around. But I think I want to take that to a newer dimension. I become like that to which I pay attention. And if I pay attention, especially in contemplation to God, I think I'll be transformed into that image. How do I do that? Whitney is a whiz on our staff with social media, and I sent her this link to Thomas Keating's method of centering prayer, and she created this, whatever that art is at the lower corner, and I guess you can scan that. Can you scan it right now? If you did your camera, would that work? I didn't even try that. How do I do that, Whitney? Do I just take a picture of it? I've never scanned anything in my life. Open in Safari. It just worked, okay? This 65-year-old is learning. So right there, I've got the method of centering prayer. Would you do that? And just try it. Practice it. See what happens.